Welcome to We Love No Other podcast from IlliniBoard.com from the highway on my drive to Lincoln. No intro music because, wait, I used to do intro. Oh, gosh, people who have been around a long time remember, like, in 2011, I think, I started doing stuff with Audio Boom, which is who I still use as the podcast host, and I started, like, recording stuff and, like, uploading it straight to the site back on the old blog. And so then I started doing this thing where, like, before work, like, on a Monday morning, I remember, like, sitting in, like, a Sonic parking lot, and I thought I needed intro music for it, so I would turn the radio on and play, like, a CD in my car. And then, like, turn it down as I started and, like, welcome to the Monday morning update. I gotta go find one of those things. Let's see. Let's just do that right now. Let's find. Yes, there we go. Intro music. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to We Love No Other podcast from IlliniBoard.com. And that's our intro music, Hot-Blooded by... What is that? Foreigner? I think that's Foreigner, right? Or was that when what's-his-name left Foreigner and did a solo career? I don't know. Doesn't matter. Okay. I got 8 hours of driving. 7.5 if I exceed the speed limit on my way to Lincoln. So I decided, I haven't done a pod in like 10 days, so you know what? Let's just record one while driving. The audio will be horrible, but maybe I can take some questions. Look, a Friday morning, Friday afternoon, driving, like, straight across. I don't go up to 80 to go to Lincoln. It's a tiny bit faster to me, to stay, go all the way across the state on 72, and then, just south of Quincy, get off on 36, head into Hannibal. And then 36 all the way across Missouri is an interstate, but it's 4-lane with exits, no stoplights, nothing the whole way. And I think the speed limit's 65 or maybe even 70. So when you do it on Google Maps, it says it's maybe like 5 minutes faster to go that way than to go on up to I-80 and across through Omaha and down to Lincoln. But I've found it's maybe 15 minutes quicker to go through this because, I don't know, I think when Google Maps estimates times... They don't really look at a non-interstate highway as something where you can set the cruise. Okay, all you cops, close your ears for a second. You set the cruise at 9 over, and then you're good. So, you know, I can just set the cruise on 36 all the way across the state of Missouri. If it's 65, I'll set it at 74 and cruise on my way and then get on 29 outside of St. Joseph and... on up to Lincoln, save myself 15 minutes from the other route. I'm rambling. So I put out a thing for questions, and so that's what this pod's going to be. I don't have a guest. I don't have anybody I'm talking to. I'm talking to you. I put a thing out on Twitter. Then I saved some of them on a list that's big print and easy to read for me to just be sitting here with the phone in the clip on the dashboard and read the topics, not so much questions, but topics that people want me to cover. So, might do this again. I got a lot of driving coming up. Let's see. Tuesday's Northwestern at home, then I'm flying to Minnesota for that game next Saturday, and then I'm driving to East Lansing Tuesday or Wednesday of the next week, and then I'm driving to Madison. So, yeah, I got a lot of travel time coming up. So maybe if this works, I'll do it again. I don't know. We'll just try stuff and see what it sounds like. So, going straight to the questions. First, gosh, it's hard to pick. I should have put these in order of the way I wanted to go through them. I'll just start with this one. What are the realistic expectations for the basketball team right now? Certainly have Final Four potential. Inconsistency makes me fear an early exit. I can ramble on that for about 10 minutes. as each year goes by, I get a little more into efficiency numbers, nerd stats, as I used to. What am I saying used to? I still call them. And the reason I like them a little more each year is because basketball makes a little more sense to me each year in terms of those. Let me see if I can explain this. So, So, I'm a luck guy, right? When we talk about football, we talk about turnover luck. You know, I point to turnovers and I say, okay, that ball bounced out. Jake Hansen forced the fumble against Wisconsin. It's an oblong ball that hits the ground. There's a Wisconsin offensive lineman standing right there, but it hits the point of the ball and skips directly away from him and directly to Isaiah Gay, who recovered the fumble. We go down, Bebe touchdown, Tony Adams interception, McCourt field goal, we beat Wisconsin. A lot of that depends on once Hansen punches that ball out from Jonathan Taylor, it's just where the point of the ball hits. It's either going left, right, up, down, stop, go. Doesn't, you know, it's kind of unknown in that moment. And in that moment, it went right over the guy's foot and directly to Isaiah Gay. That's the kind of, like, you're going to win some of those, you're going to lose some of those. Sometimes it's going to bounce your way, sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's, you can just call it luck if a tip pass goes directly to a guy. Sometimes you're just going to call it whatever. So I've always tracked turnovers in football and turnover fairy and all that stuff. With basketball, you know, especially with hot shooting nights and cold shooting nights, you know, I think I even wrote about this once with Luther Head's three-pointer against North Carolina rimming out and, like, how close that is to rimming in, and was it 4 millimeters away from, you know, like... In a sense, you can kind of look at that as luck. So I looked at college basketball maybe 10 years ago way more in terms of, like, you can't control a cold shooting night and win 6 games in the tournament. It just takes, like, being on the whole time, and sometimes you're off and you might be a good shooter, but you're releasing a ball on an arc toward a basket, and that's going to be... You know, it's up to you whether that goes in or not. And so because of that, I didn't really look at defense that heavily because, okay, yeah, you can prevent easier shots, but are you really, you know, it's really how good is the other team offensively. I just kind of leaned in those directions. As each year goes by, I kind of understand that basketball, even though it is a spherical object going in the air and will it land or will it not, is not... It's very controllable for the good teams to win. That you can have off shooting nights, but if you're getting easy looks, and especially layups and dunks, obviously, and especially forcing bad shot after bad shot, it's not so much hot shooting or cold shooting, it's not so much anything else as it is when you play your game and you do your stuff and you play your defense well and you run your offense so well that you're getting easy look after easy look. It would take ridiculously bad shooting luck some night to lose if you can play that well. You know, sometimes golf is looked at like that. Like, you know, most golf tournaments are won by 1 or 2 strokes, okay? Every golfer finishing second lipped out 3 putts that week, 7 putts that week. Some are horseshoes where they come right back at you, that it's more than a lip out. It's like all the way around the cup and back. Those putts are quite literally millimeters from falling in. And so the reason the guy won versus the reason the guy finished second by a shot is sometimes one blade of grass on the edge of the cup that just kept it from falling in and lipped it out, and that's the margin there. So I almost looked at basketball the same way with Luther Head's three. It was so close to going in. We just needed that shot at that moment, and it just didn't happen, and those are the margins. Now I start moving much more in the direction of I hate to even use the term efficiency because I'm going to use it wrong, but I think of everything in those terms, that if you can run that same offense, if you can get that, you know, if you can up your points per possession, if you can force a whole bunch of bad shots, if you can, you know, do all the things that, let's use Baylor and Gonzaga, all the things they do ridiculously well, it's very, very hard to beat that team, even if they're on an off shooting night and a guy that usually hits 4 of 10 threes, it goes 1 for 10. Like, even with that, I realize more and more each year that you can control that with strong defense to prevent good shots. They have to have, you know, somebody would have to be hitting lucky shots from everywhere. You know, take that 19-4 lead for Penn State back in December, or the game at Penn State. They hit like 6 jump shots, 2 or 3s. The other 4 were like step back 19-footers. They were hitting everything. They hit like 10 of their first 12 jumpers in the game. And after the game, like, maybe even I asked the question about the 19-4 run, and Brad Underwood was very much like, they were hitting everything. I don't even look at that. I don't care if they're hitting everything, you know? So I'm like, okay, Illinois is down 19-4, and I put up that tweet of like hovering over the maybe we're not just good button and all this stuff. And the head coach is over there like, oh, they're not going to keep this up, obviously. You know, they've hit, you know, all these lucky shots. It's going to even out in the end. And sure did, you know. And so I start looking at basketball more and more like that. And, you know, it makes me weep for 2012 me, who was so much about recruiting and we've got to get the players and roll the ball out and everything else, because that guy was very much like, we just got to get talent and then your talent's going to beat their talent, and kind of doesn't matter the scheme or the offense or whatever. Now it's somewhat true, but it's also, you know, I understand systems a whole lot better now, I understand defense a whole lot better now, and because of that I care more about how a team looks in the numbers than I do, oh God, we took a nap against Missouri again and lost. That it's more, we have a ceiling that maybe only 4 or 5 teams have. That doesn't mean you're going to lose. 1987 Illinois team, I swear, if Ken Norman hits that shot and we beat Austin Peay, we're in the Final Four. Like, you know, it's one of the worst losses, if not the worst loss in Illinois history. Yet I still think that team was one of the top 5 Illinois teams of all time. Like, it doesn't mean, like, it's a lock, you know. The 4 number one seeds don't always get there. But I think it's true to say now, even with the Maryland loss, even with the Ohio State loss, I think it's true to say we have top 5 ceiling in college basketball. So that's a very long way to answer, you know, what, like, do we fear the bad loss? Do we fear the early exit? Yes, it's out there, but I'm beginning to understand that we can do some things that other teams just can't. We have buttons that Brad Underwood can push that a lot of teams wish they could push. And because of that, we have a lot of potential. So all that to say, like, what are the realistic expectations? I think I'm right back where I was when I wrote the preview. I wrote in the preview that my bar, even though it's ridiculously high, like, the bar to clear Sweet 16. Like, yes, we haven't been to the tournament technically in 7 years, 8 years. You know, let's just get back to the tournament. That we need to cross that bridge, yes. To me, the bar was Sweet 16. You've got to... We haven't had a second weekend since D. Darren Luther, Roger Augie. if we haven't had a second weekend in 16 years, we must get to the second weekend. We've got to win our first two rounds. So that's the bar. Expectations, right now, I think my expectation is at least an Elite Eight. Even if we go in as a 3 seed or even a 4 seed. I mean, the only thing that would maybe back me off of that if we're a 4 seed across from Baylor or Gonzaga. I just think that's the realistic expectation, is something like 2001, where we're getting to that Elite Eight game and it'll all come down to that to see if we make the Final Four. You know, to have Kofi improved like he has, to have Io playing like he is, just not many teams have that, and that pushes our ceiling way, way up there. You know, I would say we have a higher ceiling than Ohio State, even though they're ahead of us in the polls. You know, their defense is probably a little suspect, and it'll probably catch up to them at some point in the tournament, and that will be their Achilles. I think even though we lost to them at home, I still feel like in a tournament neutral setting, we have a little more to offer, especially if Trent can stay hot and be a third offensive option, and, you know, Curbelo can fix his turnover woes, and Miller can mature, and, you know, I just think we have that kind of ceiling. So realistic expectations, I think we expect Elite Eight, trying to get to the Final Four. Can we win it all? I mean, we can. It seems like, you know, you see a lot of pundits talking about, like, okay, we're, you know, this is 2005 again, when Illinois and North Carolina were destined to meet in the final. Well, this is Baylor and Gonzaga destined to meet in the final. But, I really think, you know, the bar to clear is Sweet 16. Expectation right now, I think, is Elite Eight. Maybe we can get to the Final Four. How long did I talk there? That's probably a very long time. Okay, I got to get back to my questions. The Kruger years seem to be underappreciated compared to the 2001 self and 2005 Weber teams. Very good point. I know there are people, you know, if somebody is 25 years old listening to this, they were 5 when Kruger left. Something like that. So maybe I need to set that up a little bit of what happened there. Bruce Pearl happens. Our recruiting is cut down for the 92 and 93 classes, or was it the 91 and 92 classes? 91 and 92. So we're banned from the tournament in 91 after the Bruce Pearl investigation. We can't recruit off campus at all. Can't go to some summer peach jam, whatever it was at the time. Can't attend camps. Can't go see kids in person. Can't even do no home visits, no nothing. Can't see a kid at all. You can only recruit on campus. Very limited on how much we could reach out to players. And you only had 2 scholarships per year for 2 consecutive years. So I think by the end of that, we were down to like 9 scholarship players at one point or something like that. Anyway, it's just devastating for a team. You know, think if after this season, obviously DeMonte and Trent could come back. And maybe they do, but, you know, say we had 4 or 5 scholarships to give and we could only bring in 2 guys. And then the next year, you have even more to give. You probably have 6 or 7 you could give and you only bring in 2 guys. It's just no college basketball program can really survive that. So didn't go to the tournament in 91. In 92, we were 13 and 15. 93, we finally got back to a 6 seed. Still had Deion Thomas. You know, still had something brewing as a program. Then we brought in Kiwan. Had 1 year of both them. Let's see, we were like an 8 seed, then we were 11 seed, then we were a 9 seed or something like that. So we were still getting in the tournament, and then in 96, we go to the NIT, and that's when Henson decides to retire. So all of that period was trying to get the program back, but then in 96, when we just couldn't, you know, just couldn't get the tournament, it was maybe time for Henson to retire and new blood. So Kruger is hired. He's hired that April or May or whatever it was of 96. In November of 96, there is a very big moment. Let's see, November of 96, I had just graduated. I was living with my mom back at home, working in downtown St. Louis. Let's see, I lived with my mom for like 8 months before I got an apartment in St. Louis. So yeah, in November, I didn't go to the apartment until January. So, yeah, so I can remember, I think I was like watching the St. Louis sports, like the 6 p.m. sports on Channel 5, I think, and they announced that Sergio McClain and Marcus Griffin had picked Illinois. And that was like the moment, because recruiting had fallen apart. Peoria Manual was a powerhouse. Marcus Griffin was a McDonald's All-American. Sergio was like the superstar in the state. And everyone knew of Frankie, because he was a year younger than them. And so most people knew that if you got Marcus and you got Sergio, you might get Frankie as well. And so it was a big battle, and Indiana was involved, and I think even Missouri was involved. And anyway, they pick Illinois. That was Kruger's, like, turn the program around moment. It was a shot to the recruiting we had kind of been unable to do with the restrictions in the early 90s, and the recruiting struggles that kind of continued after we got Jerry G and well, Kiwan 1 year and Jerry G the next, but the issue at the time was Illinois is not where it was in the 80s, and these sanctions have really hurt things. And so Kruger, even though he's not remembered as a recruiter, landing those two was just this massive, massive deal. You know, you find out later, after Marcus Griffin plays in the McDonald's All-American game, he doesn't qualify academically. He has to go JUCO. So he went off to JUCO, and it was like, okay, well, this will be delayed. And Sergio basically was a sixth man on that team, because it would be the 97-98 team. And then we did get Frankie in that next class, but he was Prop 48. What Prop 48 was at the time is you could come to school, but you were ineligible as a freshman. So you could come, and you were kind of forced into a red shirt. NCAA required you, if you only met the Prop 48 academic requirements, no athletics the first year, just get accustomed to school, you can play your second year. So Frank was there, but on the bench during that really tough 99 season of, 98-99, when, gosh, what did we win? I know we're 3-13 in the Big Ten, but what needs to be remembered about Kruger is, A, he was able to take Kiwan, he was able to take the other seniors, the Jerry Hester, Matt Heldman, Kevin Turner team, and win the Big Ten in 98. That was massive to get another Big Ten title. We hadn't won one since 84, I think. Like, even 89 didn't win the Big Ten. 87 didn't win the Big Ten. So we hadn't won the Big Ten since 84. So that five senior starters team plus Sergio in 98 was a huge deal. So Kruger kind of resurrected the program that way by taking what Henson left him, getting, what seed were we in 97? Like a 7 seed, 6 seed, something like that. And then winning the Big Ten with all those seniors his second year. His third year was kind of the rebuild. Had Marcus been there, had Frankie been eligible, it would have been a lot different. But Marcus was still in his second year of JUCO. Frankie was sitting out for Prop 48. So it was Sergio and a bunch of young guys, and it didn't go well. But then you add Brian Cook. So again, McDonald's All-American in 97 in Griffin, McDonald's All-American in 98 in Frankie, McDonald's All-American in 99 in Brian Cook. And that, you know, 99-2000 team is suddenly a top 25 team. That season felt so right. Probably the entire decade of the 90s just really couldn't get there. There was the great moment in 98, but then the right back down in 99 kind of felt like Illinois football, you know, winning 9 games and winning 3 the next year or something like that. But 2000 felt like, okay, we're back on solid footing. The recruiting is fixed. We have 3 McDonald's All-Americans. This is a different world where, you know, this is Illinois basketball has returned. Kruger turns that into an NBA job. We get Bill Self, who takes it even higher, takes the recruiting even higher. We don't have to rehash what, you know, 01 through 06 looked like. What did we lose? 3 home games in 7 years or whatever. God, 3 home games in 7 years. Can you imagine? Ugh. God, it was amazing. Anyway, so yes, Kruger needs to get the credit for like boosting it back up. It's very interesting that Self is remembered so highly, but Self mostly won with Kruger's players. Now he did obviously bring in D, Darren, and the rest who you know turned the next thing around. But like Kruger set the table with 3 McDonald's All-Americans, and that was massive. It turned everything around for us, and you know, after a decade, I mean, it's very similar right now, right? Like, you know, Io Kofi Miller Curbelo has maybe done what Sergio, Marcus, Frankie, and Brian Cook did as far as where we were to where we got to. So, yes, great question. Kruger should get a lot more credit, you know, for what he's done. Although it's still so weird that he went, looked at it and said, I think NBA is better than continuing to coach these guys at Illinois. It's still such a strange thing for me. Okay, let's get to some, there's some football questions here. So, can you walk us through what the next 5 years of football will look like if this thing is going well, sustained success? Walk us through roster construction, Bielema guys versus Lovey guys, and recruiting. Let me take a drink here. My throat is dry. This is very hard to answer because I have to row my canoe through Stance Swamp. There, I said it. There have been so many stances taken that it's very difficult to discuss this without people having their feelings rise up and be like, well, no, it was this, and this was the reason, and no, and it's gonna, like, I'll give you an example. Like, if Bielema wins right away, people who are angry at Lovey's recruiting are gonna have to switch to, it was Lovey's coaching, not his recruiting. He had talent, he just didn't know what to do with it. So because there's so many like stances around this stuff, it's hard to discuss it without people saying, you know, I'm going to say some things here like, well, the recruiting has improved, and people are going to throw things and stop listening to the pod because it's like, no, how could you say Lovey's, you know, so that's Stance Swamp. And I will now attempt to maneuver my way around the landmines. I think there's a unique opportunity, obviously, with the seniors returning for the very thing I just discussed to occur, which is Lovey, built for 5 years, had all these seniors, couldn't do anything with them, went 2-6. Bielema now gets the same team minus the linebackers, kind of. Minus Bebe, Hansen, and Eifler, basically, is how I see. I mean, you lost Kendrick Green, but, like, you know, Bielema now gets those players to see what maybe it could have looked like. I saw another question when I was saving these questions to one page that someone else is asking about, like, you know, what, how this compares to, well, I'll get to that question later. There's part I'm leaving out because it's another question later. What I'm saying now is that Bielema has an opportunity with these players coming back to maybe, I wrote that article called Run It Back, where you could maybe try this again. See, like, I wrote the other thing, went through the numbers. Illinois was 12th in returning production going into 2020. The teams that were 1 through 11 all improved. The average win improval was like 2.7 more wins than the year before, or something like that, for the Power 5 teams that did that. You know, Northwestern was number 1 on the returning production list. It went from 3-9 and to win the Big Ten West. And the 12th team on that list went from a 6-6 season where they won 4 Big Ten games to 2-6. Bielema now has a chance to possibly try that again with these 12-13 seniors returning. It's not exactly that. There are a lot of key pieces missing, especially Jake Hansen, especially Josh Amadrabebe. But he at least has a chance to do something the first year with a fairly older team. You know, you get all these offensive linemen back, and you have probably the most experienced offensive line in the country next year. Yes, other teams do have some returning, but it's not like they have 4 seniors on the offensive line. You know, other teams, you know, like I looked at Northwestern yesterday. They've got one of their linebackers, what's his name, Bergen or whatever. He's coming back. And then they got, I don't know, I think they had 4 starters returning plus their kicker and punter. And everybody else from their 22 seniors was leaving, going on, either trying the NFL or just moving on with life. So I think it is kind of unique that Illinois is bringing back a lot more than everybody else, especially on the lines. You know, 4 seniors on the offensive line, 4 seniors on the defensive line next year for this team. That's something Bielema can work with and maybe coach up a little bit. But then it's also, you know, I have my, this is the other question I've been avoiding talking about. Like, I have my thing taped to the mirror in my mind, basically. My note I see in the bathroom every morning, which is like, do not buy in to a new coach having seniors. I did that in 2012. Hey, maybe there's enough seniors here to win. 2013 is when the rebuild begins. I did so in 2016. Hey, maybe there's enough to get 6 wins here. 2017 is when the real rebuild begins. And so I don't want to do it again, because even if we look at other teams, programs that, you know, had that opportunity, a lot of times, I mean, heck, Nick Saban went 6-6 at Alabama's first year, lost to Louisiana Monroe at home. Like, it just takes a while to get your stuff, your schemes implemented, to get your way you do things, to build this machine that doesn't make mistakes and doesn't have mental errors. You know, it just takes some time. So that's what I go back and forth between. On one hand, hey, another chance at the 2020 season, maybe with better coaching, and, you know, maybe we'd see what this should have been in 2020, versus, okay, it takes a while, and it takes a while for everyone, and, you know, Bill Connelly did his SP Plus projections for next season. Illinois, 83rd nationally. And that those are just raw numbers of recruiting plus returning production plus how what kind of team you've been the last 5 years. And when you put all those things together, we're 83rd out of 130 teams with many, you know, group of five small conference schools in front of us. So when you look at it that way, okay, yeah, it's going to be a while. When you look at it as, you know, there's some seniors here, and with experience, you can sometimes win more games than you should, and, you know, this isn't bad. So that's the battle for next year. I don't know where I'll end up. I need to see it. I need to watch spring ball. I need to watch summer camp. I need to get a feel for what it's going to be, even what the schemes will look like. I just need more time to figure all that out, to know what year one will look like. Beyond that, there's still a bit of a cliff here. I've been writing about it for 3 years of, okay, first step for Lovey is to win in 2020. The second step is to not do a Ron Turner and go from a big season to five wins to one win 2 years later, like we did in 01, 02, 03. And so that fall off still exists. It's helped by the fact that everybody gets an extra year here, and we kind of put it off for a year. And that gets you time to get more young guys ready. You know, if the defensive line was going to turn to Johnny Newton and Keith Randolph and Seth Coleman as the stalwarts, it's helpful that they get one more year as an understudy behind Owen Carney and Rod Perry and, you know, Isaiah Gay and everybody else who is returning. It's helpful that there's a bit of a handoff there. But it's still going to take a while. Look, like, who took over Georgia Tech a few years ago? Jeff Collins, was it? Yeah, I think it's Jeff Collins. Like, have you thought of Georgia Tech football in the last 2 years? No, you haven't. Like, things started to fall apart under Paul Johnson. They decide time to make a change. They're going to go away from what they were recruiting to with this triple option stuff. And in my mind, Georgia Tech football is like, okay, well, check back in year four. Okay, you know, it's going to be a while before they can put some things together. Honestly, I don't even know how they did last year. I just know that when a team has kind of fallen down on hard times, year three is when they can maybe start putting it back together. Year four is when maybe they could have a little breakout. It's just how it is. So everybody in the country is kind of looking at this as, okay, year three, maybe Bielma can start to really assemble something. Year four is when it takes off. So, you know, if the question here is what should it look like, it's probably, it should look like Zook, maybe. Might hate myself for saying that later, but since this is, I'm just recording this live, I'm just saying what's coming to my brain. Like, Zook with a better 2006, maybe, like a bad year, then better, but the wins aren't there, then the wins are there, and then hopefully it takes off from there instead of coming back down. You know, that's kind of how a rebuild in 2021 should look. You know, in 2016, when Lovey took over, there was some talent in that first class, but we knew there was a really steep drop-off coming. And I just wrote about that a couple weeks ago of, like, I guess I did that in the newsletter, so not everybody got that. Anyway, here's the stat from the newsletter. NFL Combine 2018, 2019, 2020. So after the 17, 18, and 19 seasons, there were 161 schools that had a player selected for the Combine. 161 schools. So there's only 131 Division I schools. Then there's, or sorry, FBS schools. There's also FCS schools. There's also Division II. There's also Division III. 161 across all those divisions had players, at least one player invited to the Combine. Illinois had zero. 161 programs were at least able to find one guy to get on the NFL roster. Illinois had zero, which means that the recruiting in 14, 15, 16 and whatever percentage you apply to it, the player development in 17-18-19, wasn't able to produce one player even on the NFL radar. Makes me feel pretty solid about what I was saying about 5 years for Lovey back in 2016, 2017. That the roster starting in 2017, the reason 22 true freshmen played is, I mean, probably one of the worst FBS Power 5 rosters ever? I don't even know how to say it. I looked up, there was the reason probably Georgia Tech came to mind is because Georgia Tech was the only other Power 5 program to go those 3 years without a single guy going to the combine. It was improved by, hold on, I gotta pass this guy in. Safety first here. I'll say it this way. Boston College had 11 combine invites over that time. You know, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I think it was Temple had 7. You know, other programs, you don't have to recruit 5 stars. You can find talent and develop it and get it on the NFL radar. Illinois had 0. Okay? 0. Kendrick Green and now I guess Jake Hansen as well are the first two combine invites since the guys who, I guess the 2017 combine, which was the 2016 season. And that was, what, Smoot and Hardy Nickerson, I think? Hardy Nickerson just being a one-year, fifth-year transfer. So, you know, you found Smoot, and then you found nobody. The talent level in the first practice of 2017, again, it makes me feel really good about saying at that camp, this is the worst Illinois football team I've ever seen. I wasn't making fun of it. I wasn't it was just I gotta be honest. These are the worst practices I've ever seen. This is worse than 2012. This is the worst I've ever seen, from people trying to do things on the practice field in 11-on-11 drill. It was just bad. And I think this is the result. You know, the result is they just, not only didn't they not recruit well, they just didn't get lucky, didn't find anybody, didn't get anything, and left this massive dip in talent that meant we just couldn't compete for quite some time. Now, what did Lovey do with that? We don't exactly know yet. I mean, we know he recruited Kendrick Green, and so he's got a combine guy, which is better than the 3 years before. But, you know, if it's only Kendrick Green for the next 4 years that gets a combine invite or gets drafted or whatever, then we know that Lovey did nothing to improve it whatsoever. So, you know, jury is still out on that. I think we can say that the talent is improved from where it stood the day Lovey took over. Mostly that is a function of we were probably the 100th most talented roster in the country on the first day of practice in 2017. But, you know, it's also because, you know, you improve it to 80th, you're probably, you're doing better. It's just the fact that you should have never fallen to that far in terms of at least some NFL talent, someone at least on the radar, even if you don't get drafted, just be at least on the radar. So that's the long way to say, I think guys like Isaiah Williams, guys like Seth Coleman, you know, I think there are guys that, if they develop, will be on the NFL radar when they graduate. I think there will be combine invites coming from Lovey recruits. You know, you get Hansen and and Green in this combine. Maybe next year you get Owen Carney gets an invite. Again, not saying they're going to be draft picks, but you know, maybe your developing guy, maybe Paucho gets an invite. Maybe Vidarian Lowe gets an invite. You know, you're getting to the point where you're putting people on the NFL radar. If that's the case, we're finally to the answer, then I do think the next 5 years for Bielema will look it's not in my mind, at least, a 5 years and those questions asked, this is going to take forever. It's a, okay, we're back down to 83rd in the SP Plus. There's a little more talent here now. Some of it came via transfer, and transfers leave pretty quickly, and you have to fill that hole with maybe another transfer. But I think it's better. So I don't... I'll say it this way. You're not going to hear from me that... You're not going to see me, like, saying 5 years, no questions asked again. That was very specific to... We weren't able to recruit for a year after the Beckman allegations came out. We had 3 head coaches in 8 months. There were roster turnovers. There were players who left after the investigation. There were players who left after the 2 coaches were let go. There were systems to implement and everything else. Like, the reason I said that for Lovey halfway through the 2016 season is because it just became clear to me what was happening and how long it was going to take. I don't think the same for Bielema. I think he might be able to do better in 21 than he could in 22. I think a lot of the Lovey talent was in that 2017 class. 2019, jury is still out. 2018 wasn't ranked very highly and hasn't shown much development. 2020 and both 2021 were very small classes because so many transfers. So, it's not 5 years, no questions asked. It should be a kind of thing where the third year you can get to a bowl, especially if you can keep some of the 2020 guys or the 2019 guys together and developing. But I don't think... I don't know. Like, I don't think it's going to be a quick, sudden... Like, even if 2021 is pretty good with all the seniors and all those offensive linemen, well, then you have one offensive lineman returning in 2022. You have 0 defensive linemen returning in 2022. You're replacing, you know, if Peters wins the quarterback job, you're replacing the quarterback. You're replacing receivers, defensive backs, you know. So... I think if Bielema is pretty good in 2021, though it's going to be a step back in 2022, but then maybe 23 could be a surge that really wasn't there for Lovey in 2018. I don't think it's going to be that kind of a thing. I don't think we're going to see 63-0 year 3. Completely outclassed, outmatched. I think there's enough to be there and be hanging with, and if the coaching is there, to turn it around quicker. That is a long, long answer, but I can't really pause here or do anything else, so I'm just going to go keep going until I need gasoline. Let's see. I'll answer this one now. Because kind of referenced it. I know you promised you weren't going to do it, but how bad do you want to break out of your "it's finally happening for Illinois football" self-ban? Well, look, I guess I'll just say this. Like, the point behind a self-ban? I'm thinking of the Parks and Rec episode where Ron Swanson has made people promise that if he does ever try to get back together with Tammy Too, he watches this videotape where he is recording himself saying to himself, "Ron, do not do this. This is sane Ron speaking to Ron, who cannot see logic right now, and telling you, run away from this woman. So that's kind of the point of the self-ban here, right? Like, I bought into 5 years, rebuild, play the freshman in 17, 2020 you're going to win 8, 9, 10 games. I bought into, so much into, Lovey will recruit Chicago, we have money to spend now on assistants, Garrett McGee stolen from Louisville when not even Oklahoma could steal him, he's going to land, we're going to land top 35 classes, we're going to, you know, I was so fired up when Lovey was hired that, you know, I have to kind of self-ban away from it now. You know, I said it's happening so many times that I now have a video cassette that I put into, I put the tape into the recorder, I press play, and I say to myself, Robert, do not do it. Do not think it's finally happening. Wait for it to actually happen before you go running around like crazy getting excited. So, you know, I guess the question acknowledged, I know how it, the question is more, how badly do you want to like destroy that tape, basically? And I do, because I'm a fan and I want to be excited about my team. But I can't, I have to obey the guy who recorded that tape, right? Like I can't, I just have to. And so it's hard to say, oh, I really want to, because the whole point is you're not going to be able to see straight and you're going to need a voice from the past speaking to you to say, just be patient, wait for it to happen. Don't declare it happening. You know, and so I think it's been helpful. Like, I mean, look, you'll probably like hate me saying that. I don't know if this will make people mad or whatever, but like, you know, Tim Beckman declared spots in the state for each of his coaches to recruit and had this, we're going to speak to every coach in the state year one. Like, you know, like everybody's like, oh my God, Bill, have you seen what the coaches are doing right now? It's, we are so, and we just didn't try before. Now we're trying. It's going to work. Like, yes. Yes, it's exciting, but, I mean, Beckman did the same thing in 2012. Like, I'm always going to want this team to win, so you're never going to hear from me. I'm not going to, like, short a coach. I'm not going to be, like, I'm not going to try to be the contrarian and be like, oh, everybody's thinking Bielema's the guy. Well, I'm going to say he's not the guy, and then when it doesn't work out, I look pretty smart. I'm not doing any of that. I'm not playing any of those games. I'm simply listening to this recorder saying, don't go nuts. Don't go crazy. Don't run around screaming it's happening. Just take your time this time. It's going to, you know, it's Illinois football. It's a massive thing to turn around. Don't go crazy. And so then it's easier to maybe see, like, I mean, it's exciting. I'm glad. I hope we find recruits. But I'm a little startled at how crazy people are going. Like, this is it. You know, if Bielema goes 2-10, you know, say he does win like 5 or 6 games next year and does better with Lovey's team than Lovey did with Lovey's team, there'll be even more excitement. Say the recruiting starts to turn around and, you know, there's some 4 stars signing on. There's going to be, like, momentum. But then if he goes 2-10 in 22, which would be kind of normal if we are jumping off that cliff, we have to replace the entire offensive and defensive line. Like, you know, it's going to be take a little time to rebuild it. People are going to be jumping off and claiming the recruiting. Well, you know, the first time Bielema's recruiting will affect the team is maybe 23 or probably 24. So, you know, it's just, for now, it's what can he do with what Lovey left him. And roster-wise, with all these seniors coming back and all the starters being seniors next year, it's just, you know, there's going to be a returning six starters kind of Illinois team in 2022. So, you know, I just want to be realistic about everything. I'm not like, you know, like when I wouldn't get excited about the recruiting, somebody said to me like, well, you're just a Lovey fan, so now you're going to be an anti-Beal. No, I'm not. Dude, there is no moment in my life where I won't want Illinois football to win. I'm hoping everything happens. I'm not hoping for anything to be proven. I have one goal, Illinois football winning. I got way too wrapped up into Lovey, thinking that his name would recruit Chicago and his, you know, his stature, you know, is one of the 50 winningest NFL coaches of all time. It's like, okay, it's going to work. And it didn't, and I had to do a big old gulp and eat a lot of crow. And I think after you eat crow, you make videotapes for yourself saying, don't go crazy again. Just take your time, pace yourself. Let's get a lot of evidence before we make a determination on what Brett Bielema's bringing. Like, I had a conversation. I'll just say it this way. Like, I had a conversation with a friend who was like, you know, I was kind of questioning the Bielema hire. I am all in. I think this is the best hire. This staff is amazing. And I was like, I'm not trying to be like a jerk or anything. I'm not trying to be like, bring you down. I'm not trying to be a contrarian. But like, Bielema's been out there for 3 years. Like he's acting like this was the best hire in years in college football. It's no offense. This is no thing. But like, after failing at Arkansas, he didn't have many other offers. And I think that's helpful for us. I think he learned some things, and I think he's going to approach it differently. And I think we will benefit from that. But, you know, for people who've moved to, this is the best hire in college football in years, there has to be some reason he was just an NFL assistant for 3 full years before we hired him. Again, I'm wanting this to work. I think it will work. I think it's a great staff. I'm very impressed. I wrote the article of, like, Brett Bielema Head Coaching Academy. These are really impressive guys in front of the camera on the Zoom calls, and I think they'll be able to recruit, and I think they're future coaching stars. And, you know, there is good vibes in this staff, and their approach, and even the fact that Bielema was born in Illini Hospital. I think it's a unique hire for Illinois, and, you know, maybe last year when another program was hiring, they didn't look at him, but maybe they should have, and maybe he can be even more successful now he's back in the Big Ten West and, you know, learned his lessons at Arkansas and Act 3, whatever. I'm just saying, like, I have these recordings. I have the notes. I mean, not really, but taped to my bathroom mirror saying, take your time, slow down, we'll get there. Might take some time. Don't go crazy again. Just deep breaths, approach it, let's see where we are. And I say that now, and once I get home from like 3 practices at fall camp, I'm going to tell you we're going 9-3 just because I'm me. Okay. Oh, gosh, we're almost an hour? Well, I mean, what the hell, guys? I mean, I'm just trying. I've got a lot more time on the road. Maybe this one will be 2 hours or something. Gotta have another drink. Gosh, I feel like I'm almost losing my voice. I haven't talked this much in months. Okay, let's maybe go back to a basketball question. Assuming Kofi is gone after this year, reasonable expectations for the Illinois front court next year? Great question. I do think Kofi's gone after this year. So, I think it's he's improved a little. He's shown progress, shot blocking. He's better on defense. He's hitting some jumpers. He is what he is. He's not going to be some slender 6'11 NBA forward shooting threes. he is what he is, and if some NBA team or team in Europe sees utility in that, they will offer him a spot. And I don't think he, you know, Io coming back, I think, is putting him in the first round. Kofi coming back, I don't really think it would. It is what it is, and we'll see what that means to the NBA team. So, with him gone, I don't know, man. I'm a Georgie guy, right? Like, what if Georgie takes advantage of the COVID rule, plays 5 full years in college, and Georgie's our go-to big guy for the next 2 seasons? He's got the post moves. He had a rough sophomore campaign, but I think he's rebounded. He's shown us even more post moves this year. His defense has been solid. If he's the starter instead of, you know, Kofi goes pro and Georgie's the starter next year, I'm okay with that. I feel pretty good about that while we develop other guys. You know, I'd love to go find somebody, and, you know, I think they might go for a transfer big, especially if they don't think, you know, Verdonk is going to be anything. They don't think, you know, if Hamlin isn't going to develop or whatever. But I'm good with Georgie being the starting 5 next year. You know, I would have loved to beat Kentucky for Oscar, but, like, I don't hate it. You know, I don't know who the backup is. I don't know who's getting the Georgie minutes, if Georgie's getting the Kofi minutes. But I'm good with that. I'd love to see 2 more years of Georgie. I'd love to see him take advantage of the rule and play 2 more seasons and cement a campus legend. I mean, I'm all in on that. Beyond that, yeah, you have to know whether... you got enough guys over there cheering on the bench that you would hope one of them is developing by next year. I mean, it'll be the 3rd year for Hamlin. It'll be 2nd year for Lieb. And, you know, you would hope that you're starting to see something from those guys for some backup minutes. Maybe they've added the weight, they've added the bulk, and they're ready to get some minutes, but who knows? I don't hate... okay, let's say this. Say Io and Kofi both go pro, which I believe they will. Say Trent and Damonte both graduate and move on, which who knows if they will or if they won't. You got a lot to replace next year. But with Grandison playing like this at the 4, Georgie goes and starts at the 5. Obviously, Curbelo and Miller would start. And so then you're just maybe Hutcherson is back from his issues. Maybe it's a transfer that you get as another guard. Maybe you do bring either Trent or Damonte back and they start in that spot. You know, let's say it that way. Let's say Trent decides to return, Damonte doesn't, just for whatever. Let's just say that. Curbelo, Miller, Trent, Hutch, or Grandison and Georgie. Curbelo, Miller, Trent, Grandison, Georgie. I don't hate that. Especially if Curbelo and Miller take sophomore leaps and become the, you know, look at what Io did freshman year to sophomore year. We get a similar jump from those guys. I don't hate that one bit. It's not as good as this team, but it's not awful. You know, then you're looking to recruiting and maybe a transfer or two, or maybe getting Hutcherson back to fill out the other spots coming off the bench. So, yeah, I'm not... I don't know. I kind of like the idea of senior Georgie playing 32 minutes a game and then maybe getting him back for one extra year because 2021 didn't count. I don't hate it. You know, that's kind of what you hope a program would become after a breakthrough season last year, and then, you know, hopefully we finish in the top 10 this year. After all that, I could get down with, you know, I'm happy with a senior big man who started as a freshman a lot and then kind of played a role behind Kofi the next 2 years, and then he gets one or maybe 2 years. I'm good with that. So we are well over. You know what? I need to be looking for my exit, don't I? When? No, maybe I don't. Let's find one more question so that we don't go on forever here. Let's see. Expectations for basketball. We covered it. The Kruger years. We'll end with this one. Do you have anything to explain what seems to have been the almost wholesale abandonment of Illinois as a recruiting base by the Smith staff over the last few years of his tenure? Or is that just sour grapes from the high school coaches? Okay, gotta be a little careful here. I'll start by saying this. Like, on this topic, the one thing that always bothers me, and this is not a shot at high school coaches, that's why I'm saying I have to be careful here. Oh, bald eagle just flew across. Oh, look at that. Oh, I feel pretty good about my... Oh, there's two more in that tree right there. Ah. Go USA. This is not a shot at high school coaches. The thing I never understand with this discussion is why people think high school coaches decide where their players go. It's part of it. It's a big part of it. The fact that Max Rosenthal is transferring to Illinois from Michigan State to be the fullback in this new offense is a direct result of Ben Miller, the new assistant coach, having a connection to, or is it Bart Miller? I don't remember which one it is. Anyway, one of our new assistants had a connection to his high school coach because his brother was his high school coach, and that connection was made, and that is eventually why Max Rosenthal said, I will go be the fullback at Illinois for a couple years. So that's big. Like, having that network of high school coaches for transfers, for high schoolers, for just connections to, hey, you need to come check out this player, it's huge. It's how the whole thing works. Sometimes, though, like, when you say sour grapes from high school coaches, you will see, like, coaches saying stuff of, like, you know, good luck getting one of my players the next few years, or, what you know, like, whatever. You know, you see it in the SEC and, you know, battles from some Georgia high school coach and, you know, the coaches from Auburn and whatever. You know, like, you know, stay out of my state, coach, and, you know, all this kind of stuff that happens. And every time I see all those things, I always think, like, but it's the kids who make the choice. Like, it's not the high school coach. Like, you can still recruit players without knowing the high school coach. Or you can have a high school coach who is dying to, that you, he thinks you, and he is pushing you, son, you need to go play at Iowa State. Really like their staff and they do great things, but that kid's going to be like, I got an LSU offer, I'm going to LSU. Like, it doesn't, like, the weight put on, you've got to be in good with the high school coaches because that's how you get their players. I don't get it. Like, look, the thing we are dealing with is that we suck for 30 years, okay? And when you suck for 30 years, ABI develops. What is ABI? Anywhere but Illinois. That is a very real thing, especially in Chicagoland, that these kids look at the landscape and Northwestern is more attractive than Illinois. And all these other schools that don't seem to have much of a football program are still more attractive to Illinois. And that existed under Turner and existed under Zook and Beckman and Cubitt and Loving. Like, it is a thing that it is just not popular to go to Illinois. Now, does that mean give up on Illinois? No. Does that mean come up with a strategy like this coaching staff is doing and tweeting how important Illinois is and here's the areas these coaches? Sure. That's all part of recovering it and getting back to it. But this whole notion that, like, well, once we do that, then they'll start sending their kids to Illinois. That's not how it works. The kids have to get excited about Illinois, not the coaches. You know, like you have to be a destination. You have to sell your vision to that kid, sometimes his family, sometimes, you know, sometimes his circle of people who are interested in seeing that kid succeed and go on to the NFL. And sometimes that head coach does get into that circle, and that's part of it, and it's big. But I just always struggle with this topic because when you discuss it, people are like, yeah, I mean, well, look, you know, once we get in with these coaches, we ignored them. Well, now they'll start sending their players. They don't send. They don't. That's not how it happens. The kids have to choose Illinois. And that is what we need to fix. Not exactly our relationship with high school coaches. It's not that it's not important. It's just not that it's, you know, it's discussed as this thing, and it doesn't work like that. If we were recruiting coaches, we would get the coaches. Now, that said, I think it's fairly obvious that Lovey looked at that. I think it's fairly obvious that Lovey looked at ABI, the existence of ABI, again, anywhere but Illinois, and in a very Lovey way, shrugged his shoulders and said, all right, well, I mean, there's 50 states. We'll just go get our players elsewhere. And does that make the high school coaches mad? Yes. Are some of the high school coaches that are getting mad not going to have a Division I player the next 20 years? Yes, absolutely. You know, but I think it was just a simple, well, we got a lot of connections in Florida, and, you know, Florida sends 7 times more athletes to the NFL than Illinois does, so let's just go get the kids from Florida that maybe aren't going to the top schools. And so that's how they went about it. I don't think it was some, like, malicious thing or anything else other than it was, like, there is something really resistant. There's something really, what do I even call it? Like, there's something that makes Illinois players more attracted to Iowa than Illinois, and a lot of that is wins. You know, there's even maybe something that makes Illinois unattractive to football recruits more so than other bad programs, like more so than like New Jersey, even when they're bad, or Rutgers, even when they're bad, still gets New Jersey recruits. Like, there's not this like appalled, no, I would never go to Illinois. It's kind of a unique thing, I think. You know, I've just been observing it for 30 years, and so it just kind of feels like it's absolutely a thing. But yeah, I mean, I think this whole thing can be summed up as how, okay, what are the approaches to it? For Lovey, I think he shrugged his shoulders. They still recruited kids from Illinois, but it was plenty more fish in the sea. I'll go to Florida, I'll go to Texas, I'll go wherever we have connections, I'll find some kids there. For Brett Bielema, it's very obvious at this point. He is, no, college football programs are built around the state they are in, and keeping those programs and building that and building those connections is the most important thing I can do. And so I will try to turn it around. I will take ABI and I will try and change it. So I think that's the big difference here. Lovey looked at ABI and said, well, I guess that's not going to work. Well, we'll try some other things. Bielma looks at ABI and says, all right, it's going to take a lot of work, but we're going to see if we can change that. And that's the simple thing, you know, like, I don't think it's much more than that. I mean, there's other little things, you know. I've written before how Lovey liked track athletes that you know, if you looked at players recruited by former staffs, like Beckman loved wrestlers as offensive linemen and defensive linemen. You know, Lovey loved track speed all over the place. Like, if you're going to default to something, maybe you don't know football that well, but you're a track guy. You know, Dale Von Campbell is a track star in high school who, hey, maybe he should try football in college, kind of thing. So, you know, there's little nuances like that. So Lovey was chasing track athletes and raw athleticism, and, you know, the track numbers are way better in Texas and Florida and Georgia than they are in Illinois, and he felt he could find those athletes in those spots better than he could in Illinois. So there's little things like that where, you know, Nebraska got away from, you know, I don't want to get too far lost with that. There's little things like that that exist. End of the day, I just think it was, Lovey saw how difficult it was to recruit Illinois kids to Illinois and shrugged his shoulders and said, we'll try something else. Bielma sees it and says, all right, let's see if we can change it. Okay, I think that's it. Oh, should I do some outro music? Yeah, let's do some outro music. So, let's see. I don't even know if I'm on a radio station anymore. Nope, we got that. So, we'll just hit the scan button and whatever we come with. Okay, there's our outro music, whatever it is. Okay, thank you for listening to this highway version of We Love No Other. I am Robert, your host. Let's get that win at Nebraska tonight. I'll be there in a few hours. Go Illini.